Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast, a show where we bring you the best clips from our previous week's Red Men Plus content. Like always, if you want to get yourselves involved and listen to these shows in full, or indeed watch them, head on over to redmenplus.com. If you sign up using the promo code weekly, W-E-E-K-L-Y, you'll get 50% off your first 2 months. So yeah, Red Men Plus, Captain Monthly subscription, use the code weekly and get yourselves a discount on listening watching these great shows, the first of which is the Final Word Show. Liverpool maintained their amazing home form with a 3-0 win over Brentford at the weekend. Delighted to be joined on the Final Word Show by the guys, and yet have a little listen to this. It was absolute belter.
I don't know if you're in the stadium. I don't know how much you come across, but you could tell how desperate they were for a clean sheet.
Yeah.
Or the goalkeeper on the back four, Matip, blocks on the line, Van Dijk clearing one off the line almost before Neil Mopay. He probably would have missed anyway because he's fucking useless, but you could tell like they were really desperate for that clean sheet. Like Liverpool got the best defensive record in the league now. I don't know where us and Arsenal have got the best joint best defensive record after City let a few in yesterday, four in yesterday. But you could tell they were really, really keen to keep that. Even when the game was done, there was 80 odd minutes, but all of a sudden Brentford had about 15 corners in a row.
No.
It was like constant, but Liverpool would bodies on the line, getting in the way, blocks, clearance, headers. Like, it did mean a lot to them to keep that clean sheet.
Yeah, they were doing absolutely everything to make sure we got the clean sheet there. And it wouldn't have been the end of the world if we never, but it's just so tight at the top at the minute when you look at even goal difference with everyone. Like you were saying, our defensive record's the best now, but it only takes a few to concede a few, and then you look in the middle of the table the way everyone's performing at the minute. But I haven't seen Virgil play that well in so long. He was literally back to himself. The confidence that he had, the way he used to be, he used to just assume players wouldn't come near him. He sort of just had this aura around him. You could sort of see him getting that confidence back at the same time, but he didn't mind sort of bullying his way and bullying players away. Matip, great, honestly. Van Dijk was probably man of the match, but I think Matip deserves a lot of credit as well. Definitely. Obviously didn't deserve the yellow like we've spoke about, but yeah, doing absolutely everything defensively. Obviously Trent sort of moved into that more inverted fullback role defensively. Simicast was probably better going forward than he was defensively, but Van Dijk, oh, honestly, it's so good to see him like that, because after the injury I was really worried that we might never see him back to that again, and that's sort of what I'm worried about with Robbo now, is will we see him ever getting back to the, but that's the thing with injuries, isn't it? It does give you that anxiety around the players, but made up with Van Dijk.
He was brilliant, Van Dijk, Lewis. Yeah. Let's speak more about him. Is that it was like the Van Dijk of old, where he just wins every header. Anything that comes near him in the air, he's in the way. There was the one where Mbeumo and Van Dijk just put the afterburners on, catches up to him and just leans into him and just nudges it behind. It was like watching Virgil of a couple of years ago. He had the injury. He played a bazillion games last year. He admitted himself. He felt it.
Yeah.
The World Cup certainly took an impact on him as well, and all that kind of stuff. It does look like maybe having the captain's armband has raised his level, but whatever it is now, like, he looks somewhere near the best, and when he's anywhere near it, he is the best. Like, you can, there's some really good centre backs in the league, some really, really good ones. Diaz yesterday gives a penalty, he's still brilliant. You've got Saliba, you've got loads of them, but he's the man, and when he plays like yesterday, he is the man.
Yeah, he was outstanding. Oh, I keep doing that, sorry. He was outstanding yesterday. I think he's, what I've said before, I thought his legs were going slightly, but yesterday he just completely changed my mind. That was the first game in a while where I felt like he was really getting at attackers. At times, he's been a bit standoffish. Yesterday, he was running at everyone. He was jumping at everyone. He was physical. And I feel like he's becoming one of these players, similar to like when John Terry started winding down, where, yes, physically, maybe is starting to wane slightly, but mentally, he knows where to be. He knows where to put himself. And tactically, he's a very astute defender. I think as well, he's benefited from having from us having depth at centre-back now. Obviously, we could probably do with one more, but Kwanzaa coming in, Matip's been playing the way he has, Konate, I think he's benefited from being taken out of the team during those Europa League games, because if we were in Champions League, he'd be playing every Champions League game as well as the league. Yeah. So I think he's just benefited from being able to have those breaks and have that rotation to sort of physically recover, ready for the next game. And, you know, City coming up, I think we're in the best position now with everyone's form and results to go into that game.
I suppose as well, I mean, it's like, when he had the levels he got to, and then it was like, oh, where are we at here? Maybe some of it is to do with what's in front of him as well. Yeah. Like when he's got a midfield that's got legs, and he's not constantly just having to do like Liverpool under siege a lot last season. Mm. I know it's his job and he's meant to defend, but like it does help him when there's a bit more protection in front of him. Maybe that's a factor as well. The lads in front of him making it a little bit easier for him. Yeah. But when he's called upon now, he still looks somewhere near Virgil van Dijk levels.
I think you're 100% right about that, to be honest, because when you look back at last season, our midfield was just getting absolutely ripped apart, and then the defenders were having far too much to do every single game. It was like that every game, and now you look at the midfield that we've got. I mean, I know we've praised the midfield a lot in this game, but I think that is what... To be fair, when you think about it, van Dijk makes everyone next to him look better. He really does. Yeah. He really does have that effect. And obviously, like when you think about Matip, when Virgil's not there, his game doesn't look as good. I think Van Dijk just has that ability to sort of lift the players around him and do that. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, it was made up.
I suppose to round up then, Lewis, okay, Thomas Frank after the game was very gracious. Like, yeah, he spoke really well at Liverpool. Mo Salah, he praised Jürgen and Liverpool, all that kind of stuff. It does feel like, it was interesting because Jamie Carragher made this point a couple of weeks ago. Like, Liverpool aren't trying to win the league, they're just trying to come fourth. And I was like, I'm not sure I agree with that. Later on the Bias Football podcast, by the way, Paul and the guys are going to go more in depth in the whole weekend as a whole with City and Spurs, etc., etc. But that, I think, we don't know where Liverpool are going to be at the end of the season. The end of the season will be what the end of the season will be. But a 3-0 home win against a good Brentford side, who you mentioned before, I've had some good results this season. They were ninth. Liverpool come back in off a bit of iffy form. I think the one thing we can't question on this side is the mentality of them. Yeah. Like it does look like, you mentioned before, like Van Dijk celebrating when he got that block in on that. You know, Matip's reaction to getting booked when he's like slamming up. Like they are up for it. Like there's no doubt about it. The Reds, I think sometimes you can tell by our team act how good they think they are or not. Like last year, what's the fucking point of getting this emotional? Because I think we're a bit crap. I think that's everyone had a sense of that a little bit until we got on that run near the end. You can tell by how they're acting, they think they're good. Yeah. And that mentality is definitely there. You can see like they're all confident. They're all backing each other up. They're all, more important, they're celebrating the successes. Yeah. It does feel like they've got the Liverpool mojo back.
Yeah. And I think the signings have helped because it's, like you said before, the midfield in front last season was so, not poor, but obviously we just
got wrapped.
It was poor.
I don't want to belittle anyone too much, piss poor.
We saw not the player anymore.
But like, so it's, do you know what I mean? Like, because now there's these young, energetic players who have come in, like Szoboszlai, Gravenberch, McAllister's, and energy. Everyone who was in that squad who nearly won the quadruple is going to be thinking, shit, like, look at these players. They're up for it. We can be up for it. And, you know, they look rejuvenated. Yeah, there's still moments like Luton and Toulouse and stuff, but that's going to happen. You know, the season we won the league, we got thumped by Watford, like 2-0, 3-0. Those results happen. And like you said, mentality-wise, they're treating every game at the moment like a final. Like they have to win it, which you need to do if you're against Man City. And we need to go into that Man City game now with that in mind and make sure that we give a good stead of ourselves in that match. Because if we play if they've got that passion in them at the moment and that ability, we can play City and we can beat them regardless of where we are.
If you think
we just need to make it happen.
If you think Mo Salah's just thinking about top four, then you're wrong. He's not the type of player that just sits there and thinks, let's go for top four. Most of the players are like that. You look at Trent now he's vice-captain, the way he's playing as if he wants titles. Same with Virgil. These players aren't playing for top four. I mean, I know that's what Carragher's saying, and we've got to sort of manage our expectations at the same time, because this is obviously Klopp's regenerating a whole new side here. Mostly, but I can't see Salah going into it thinking, oh yeah, let's go for top four and maybe win the Europa and another one of the cups. I just don't think that's the way he looks at things.
Sobislai said
let's win everything. That's not the mentality that Klopp breeds, is let's go for top four and be happy with it. Klopp's always disappointed with seconds, you know what I mean? I mean, when you're coming up against Man City, what are you going to do? But if we can go to the Etihad and beat them, that's a massive, massive statement.
Yeah. I suppose the good thing compared to times gone by, the home form looks back again. It was like Liverpool have always, even when they've been rubbish, they've actually been really difficult to beat at Anfield. Very few teams beat them. But this season, they've won every game in all comps by at least two goals.
Yeah.
Like it's Anfield is becoming this fortress again. And like I say, Brentford, when we go to their place, it'll be a very tough game, and I'm sure it will be. But like, if the home form is going to see Liverpool through again, and that's another example, like against a good team. And you know, in years in the future, I'll just back, oh yeah, Liverpool beat Brentford, they'll probably batter them. Yeah. It didn't feel like that, but that's what's like. For some reason at Anfield, the Reds are the goal scoring form's there. It's the firepower we've got, it's fantastic. Yeah. This Anfield form could be huge for us going forwards. It should be.
Yeah, the biggest thing you can do is win your home games. If you win all your home games, or at least win in a couple of draws, you put yourself in good stead for no matter where you are. I think Newcastle said that in the Champions League group. Obviously, it's not working, but if they said if they win every home game, you're in good stead to progress, and we need that as well. Anfield, like you said, teams have come and beat us. Teams do get results every now and then, but it's so few and far between. I think, what was it, like 60-something games that we went in a row without losing, or 30 or something like that.
Leeds are the only team we won with a crowd there for ages, wasn't it, for a long time.
So, you know, it's Anfield is the 12th man. It's the biggest arsenal that we have, biggest weapon we have in our arsenal. And if we can just get results at home and then go away from home, like you said, go to the Etihad and really put in a shift, there's no reason we can't set our ambitions high. I do think we're slightly, maybe some fans saying we're going to win the league, you know, it's might be a bit premature, but like I said, if we can go away from home and pick up points on top of our incredible form at home, there's no reason we can't set our expectations high.
Thanks very much to Abby and for Lewis for joining me for that one. And yeah, thanks for Liverpool for winning another game of footy. That was excellent. Later that afternoon, we released the Biased Football podcast. It was Paul, Chris, Chloe and Dan having a big chat about the Premier League title race and what potentially could stop each of those teams winning the league. And yeah, check out what they had to say about the Gunners.
Let's talk Arsenal then. I honestly, because that's the league table thing, I don't understand how Liverpool... We should be above Spurs, because like I said, I think Spurs are a bit of a flash in the pan, you know, good times and all that. And look, we're level on points with Arsenal, so it's not like we've got them in, you know, in our dust in the rearview mirror. But Arsenal, I don't know. They feel like another one of them teams to me that they've been overhyped a little bit too soon. I think they're good. I think they're very good and they've got very good players. But I still look at them and us, and then you throw City into the mix, and City still feel like the most complete outfit of the lot. We're talking about the treble holders at the moment. But I don't know. Arsenal, again, I don't know what it is. And it's probably a centre-forward is probably the answer to this. But they don't feel to me like they're they're massively more ready to topple City than they were a year ago. Maybe they are, but I mean, ultimately, I'm not sure it necessarily yields that title challenge for what they
think. I tend to agree with you, and there's two question marks around Arsenal for me. I was just thinking there whilst you were talking about what it is that makes me doubt them, because I keep having these sort of feelings about the league this season, how it may well pan out, and I still have us and Man City sort of potentially battling it out. How deep into the season that is remains to be seen, but then I have this sort of afterthought of Arsenal, if you like, and then I go, why are they an afterthought? Because you're right, they come second last season, they pushed them in inverted commas, and they should be doing it again, of course, having spent so much money in the summer, albeit Timber's injury didn't help. But I think it is. I think it's a centre forward, as you mentioned there, because I think if it was Gabriel Jesus constantly, that'd be fine. But he seems to be picking up quite regular injuries now, and Nketiah definitely isn't the answer. On the flip side, they've even gone to Trossard a little bit in the false nine, which I don't think is it either, personally. So if they do have a problem, it might be there. And I think if they went and got Ivan Toney, that might potentially solve that in January, possibly. But the other one is a mess Arteta has made of his own doing, essentially, and it's the goalkeeper situation. Like, and that keeps rearing its ugly head as well. Like, and that doesn't show any signs of stopping. He can't resolve that essentially until January at the earliest, if he wants to. Because in January he's got the opportunity to say, "You're my guy, you're gonna be my guy, the other one, sorry, on you go." If he does that, remains to be seen. But yeah, they're the two. He's not done himself any favours in that department for me. And there the maybe a little bit of squad depth if they lose a Saliba or someone like that potentially as well, but a Declan Rice even, because I know Partey's injured as well. But I think they've got all the tools, but two of the key ones, your keeper and your centre forward, don't seem to be quite settled enough.
It still comes down to me. It's like that. It's the squad experience. And I think Saka's amazing. I'd like, I'd have Saka all day. It's like, you know, you guys did it. Like, who you buying? If you got huge money for Salah, you'd be going in and tempting Arsenal for Saka all day. Martinelli, brilliant. He's had some injury problems himself this season. And Nketiah, I said, is Origi. That's fine. You need an Origi. You need someone who can just come in when you shit hit the fan, and you need someone to come in and might score a goal for you. Brilliant. Gabriel Jesus is never going to score 20 to 30 goals from a centre forward position for them, and he's not on the pitch enough to be able to do it. But he's their guy. Mm-hmm. He's the been there and done it guy, and he's probably mid-20s. He's probably 25, 26, and he's surplus to requirement for Man City. Zinchenko's yet another one who's got injury problems. When the chips are down, I'm looking at Liverpool and going, Virgil van Dijk's getting me out the shit, or Salah's getting me out the shit, or Trent's getting me out the shit, or whatever, any of the guys who've been there. Arsenal's main men are not winners yet, and that's the thing that undoes it. That has to change at some point. It happened to Liverpool, of course, but I don't know. That's where I think they're a little short.
This is going to sound incredibly harsh on Arteta, and I'm not going to apologise for it, right? But he's just the fucking wish Pep Guardiola. Do you know what I mean? Like, how is a wish Pep Guardiola going to beat a Guardiola?
Yeah.
He doesn't have the resources. He doesn't have a fucking centre forward like Erling Haaland. He doesn't have the unlimited resources. He may be one of the best managers in the world, but he's not as good as Pep Guardiola. And his players aren't as good as Pep Guardiola, and he's playing the same system as Pep Guardiola. I never see a way where Arsenal, while Pep Guardiola is there, topple Manchester City.
And look, we've seen them beat Man City this season, which is great, and it's possible to do it in one-off games, of course, but I think that's an interesting point. It's a bit like, you know, like when Spain win the tournaments and Barcelona are dominating, and everyone goes, ah, tiki-taka, right, sand, I'm all over this. But when you're not the innovators, maybe you can find ways to find a new, fresh approach on it, and maybe, you know, you'll run it long enough that Saka, Martinelli and co hit their prime, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, an Odegaard, three absolutely best in class footballers who are absolutely ready to dominate all games of football. But he's on that knife edge as well, where they might go a couple of seasons and they've not won, and then Saka and Martinelli and Odegaard are looking around going, I could have been playing these seasons at a team that actually wins silverware. I think that's a really interesting point. Is he good enough to find that extra something that Pep doesn't have? I don't think he is. Better hair.
Oh, infinitely.
Yeah.
He's got some.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere that heavy, is it?
No.
It will not stop.
Super glued. He's used the craggle on that,
hasn't he? Yeah, he's used the craggle.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Arsenal. But like, again, it goes, that's the point. They feel like, it felt to me like last season was that one.
Yeah.
You've got a head of steam, you've got it all going, it's there for you. What have they, I mean, Declan Rice is really good. But I said this in the summer, I'm not sure £100 million on Declan Rice is enough to bridge the gap to make it
is he better than Rodri?
No,
done in it.
But he might be, you know, he might be in that kind of, he might be good. I just saw Rodri against Chelsea, and he's just a man, isn't he? I mean, you see everyone else playing that role in the league, and they're all not there. He just, everything works for him. He's something else. But they've got a thing. It's Declan Rice. He's really good, but what's he done? I know he's just won the
Conference.
The basket you know, the waste paper basket version of the UEFA Cup. Like, I mean, great, good on him. He's won a little bit of something. But is he the guy? Is he? Might be. Mm-hmm. Might be. But it's a question, not an answer.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Thanks very much to Paul and the guys for that one. Moving on then, it was the deep dive. You've got Chris Pajak and you've got Josh Williams, the stats gurus themselves. So yeah, check out the first 10 minutes of this week's episode of the deep dive.
So this one, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Cody Gakpo, I suppose, more than anything, mate. It's been a bit of a strange start, I suppose, for Cody this season. He's not kicked on. And if anything, maybe... Is it fair to say slightly regressed, Josh?
A bit. I mean, I feel like so far it's been a good season for us. We're enjoying things, you know, in all competitions still, quarter-final of the Carabao Cup, second in the Premier League. Everything's good, really. But I think the one of the few negatives you would throw in there is probably the fact that Gakpo looks a little bit... Is lost too harsh, do you think?
I don't think it's too harsh. No. He was definitely lost in the game at the weekend.
Yeah, well, I thought the game on the weekend was one of his better midfield performances, and I think that kind of captures how bad his early performances were against Chelsea and against Brentford, because he started both of those games, first two games of the season, and he just didn't... A bit of a passenger, to be honest. But I think he's an interesting talking point for us to touch on now, because obviously, as I said, everything's going well, but Gakpo is a bit... It's just less going well compared to everyone else, if you know what I mean.
I think that's right, isn't it? I think when he first came into the football club, you know, he was obviously talked about as this sort of left winger, and actually what we saw quite quickly and quite early on was that he was going to play central, he was going to play that number nine, and at the time I think it's fair to say that Darwin Núñez maybe hadn't hit the ground running, and he ended up on the left-hand side, and we saw it was almost like, well, it's easy if we get Cody Gakpo in there because we understand how Firmino's played that role for years. And the players around him, when you're desperate for points, you're desperate to try and get back into the Champions League, didn't need to learn how to play with a new player. It was almost like we just got a Firmino version, a Firmino version 2.0. And now all of a sudden, we've moved on. We are clearly playing towards Darwin Núñez being Liverpool's number nine. And Cody's sort of filling in places, I suppose.
Yeah, well, last season, obviously, he arrived in the middle of the campaign, and by the end of the season, I think he'd started 17 games in the Premier League, and Darwin had started 19, despite arriving 6 months earlier. So he obviously had a lot more of an impact. Seemed to be a bit of a Firmino bridge in terms of allowing the team to play in a similar way to before without Firmino on the pitch. Obviously, weren't really ready to integrate Darwin properly at the time. And I think he improved Liverpool's defensive game a little bit. But I think the plan was always for us to move towards this kind of Trent as an inverted fullback, Núñez as a poacher, advanced number 8. That was kind of the blueprint for the new team. And With that being the case, I'm still not entirely sure like what the plan is for Gakpo, if there even is one. There might not even be a plan in terms of like this is where he's going to play for the rest of his. This is where he's going to play. It might be a bit more like he's just kind of always going to be that. A bit like a Joss has always been, where Joss just kind of plays wherever we need him and does it, you know, performs to a reasonable standard. But I think Gakpo so far this season. I mean, can you think of a game he's played? He's shined.
No, but any game? And. I'm correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's always felt like he's scored just before he's being subbed as yeah. well. Like to sort of make you think, oh, he's playing better than he is. But I think there was definitely one game this season where the lad was ready to come on and Gakpo scored and then he literally got taken off like moments later and stuff.
Yeah,
so
that was Wolves, wasn't it?
Was it Wolves, yeah.
Might not have been, I don't know.
And it kind of felt a little bit like that. Now, what's funny, actually, when you think about it, Josh, is he's actually kind of... How many goals has he scored there, can you see?
So far this season?
Yeah.
Excluding internationals, he's on four.
Four. He's kind of felt a little bit like Jota in that regard, in that he doesn't... Jota doesn't always play well, but he scores goals. I think Jota's actually turned his form around.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's playing really well as part of the team, but Gakpo I don't think he's playing well, but he was still getting those opportunities, still getting into the right area, still tapping the ball in and stuff. So it is interesting, but I think, you know, when we talk horses for courses, I can totally understand Cody Gakpo in and around the squad, but Luis Diaz is ahead of him, right? Yeah. Nunes is ahead of him.
Yeah.
You would think Gravenberch is going to be ahead of him or Kurt Jones is ahead of him in this position. You could argue that Jota's ahead of him in this position.
Yeah, exactly.
So third choice and then throw McAllister in the mix could be fourth choice.
Mm.
Second choice.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got more talent than that, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's really surprising. It's not surprising, but it's just because it's proper competition that we've got now. But he is he was the captain of PSV. He's an established international and things. He cost about 30, 40 million, I think, that when we got him in. And he made a statement when he came in by making a bit of an impact and stuff. But as of right now, yeah, he's kind of fallen down the pecking order a little bit. And yeah, I said on the agenda, didn't I, that... I'm getting ahead of myself here, but one of the worries that I've got is the comparison with Havertz. I seen someone say that a couple of days ago and I could see it like, and I don't want to see it. Believe me, I don't want to see that.
What were they saying then? Just that he's a similar player or he's got about as much impact as Havertz or?
Just if you look at Havertz since he came to England, he was bigged up before he came to England and since he's came here, he's painted as a versatile player. But you're not versatile if you don't play well anyway. Versatile is the opposite.
Fucking hell.
When you think about it, versatile is the opposite. Versatile is play there, wherever, and you'll reach 7 out of 10 easy, no matter what. Gakpo and Havertz especially, they don't look at home anyway. And that's the worry I have with Gakpo. It's still very early days for us to be making this comparison. Like, but... I hope he's not one of them before too long where no one kind of knows what he's particularly great at.
But do you remember, if you think back to when we signed him, obviously I don't think the plan was to sign him at the time that we signed him. Obviously, was it Tottenham that were interested or was that
United,
the Diaz one? It was United, yeah. It was Diaz for Tottenham, wasn't it? United are interested and we think, right, we'll just get this done. With more good players is never a bad thing. And then... obviously, you go into this mad midfield rebuild whereby you end up getting McAllister and Szoboszlai and Gravenberch and Endo. And I suppose before Fabinho and Henderson leave, Gakpo is probably higher up the pecking order in the midfielders. But again, you've, for want of a better phrase, shit changes. It's like, you know what I mean? And I suppose, is Gakpo doing anything to suggest that he can be more involved in games? What are his stats like when it comes to, I don't know?
Well, I think the worry I've got and the kind of statistical element that I keep touching on is just his touches. And that sounds like a really basic thing because, say, for example, Erling Haaland, Darwin Nunes, they never touch the ball, but there's such threats. They put the ball in the net all the time. They make a difference in that sense. I think Gakpo's a bit different because he's playing in midfield a fair bit. So if you're in midfield, I can't think of many midfielders at all off the top of my head who get away with being elite in midfield but never get on the ball. You know, it's kind of a standard expectation. So against Brentford on the weekend, He posted 43 touches in the game. He played about 82 minutes, I think, in that. So, for a bit of perspective on that, Nunes posted 39 as a striker. And this is Nunes as well, who's running away from the ball all the time.
Who's the tip of the spear, yeah.
Yeah. Salah, again, who is a forward, he's playing further away from the ball than Gakpo is. Salah posted 64 touches. Szoboszlai, who played on the opposite side of the midfield to Gakpo in an identical role, posted 71 touches. Gakpo on 43.
So nearly double. So Szoboszlai.
This is what I mean when I'm saying, like, the whole kind of black hole narrative passenger, the game passes him by a tiny bit. And that can't really be the case when you're playing there. And it was the case earlier in the season. So it happened against Chelsea. I think he was bottom of the game in terms of touches. Same against Bournemouth. And then it got to a point where Jones comes in his place. Gakpo gets benched. And in Jones' first start against Villa, he posted 61 touches in an hour and then come off for Gakpo.
One and a half, the amount of touches
And then Gakpo came on for him. That's kind of how it's gone for him, but that's been him in midfield, and that's why, despite me initially saying I think he can play in midfield, and he I think he still potentially can, but he needs to work on that element, definitely. That's the how weird. It's not a midfield trait. It's not a midfield tendency, so, and he doesn't have the running in behind to the same level as a Darwin or a Salah or even a Diaz, so it's difficult to play him on the flanks. And then the number nine, we've got less of a need now for a false nine to drop into deeper areas, because you're expected to go and do that, to let these lads do that. So it's a curious one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether, I don't know, I was thinking about this the other day, is I remember when the season started, I was thinking, well, I like Diaz with Nunes, and I sort of like Gakpo with Jota, because the way that the Nunes, Diaz seems natural. And Jota Gakpo, because they're sort of going out the space, or Jota Gakpo over here, something like that. But actually, what I think we're seeing with Jota and Nunes is it's working really well with the two of them at the moment, because he's just ending up in this area of the field regardless. He's allowing overlaps for lads like Kostas Tsimikas, who gets two assists at the weekend from being able to get down that left-hand side. And now I'm sort of thinking, well, where does Gakpo fit in? And we've not really seen Gakpo on the left very often. And no. I don't think he's shined when he's been on there anyway, even though that's his supposed position. Where I think he's shined is in the centre-forward position. And he's just not getting the opportunities.
Thanks to Josh and thanks to Chris for that one. And next up and finally, it is a clip from our Journo Inside show. It was me, it was Neil Jones, and we had a big, big old chat about Archie Gray. Liverpool were linked with a £40 million move for the teenager, which sounds extraordinary. It probably is extraordinary, but yeah, I asked Neil Jones all about that one. Story that caught my eye came out November 10th from Matt Hughes in the Daily Mail. An exclusive says Liverpool are up a £40 million move for Leeds' 17-year-old star Archie Gray just 3 months after his first team debut, as Premier League clubs take notice of the brilliant midfielder. I mean, £40 million for a 17-year-old, that was the first thing. I mean, I'll be honest.
That's the headline, isn't it? You know,
literally, yeah.
£40 million is huge, and I can't. I was speaking just before we came on. Leeds have only sold two players, I think, in the history for that price, and they were Calvin Phillips, who was an England international in 26, 27, and Rafinha, who's a Brazilian international, who went to Barcelona. So the idea that £40 million for however talented a young lad is, and we're talking about Stefan Bajcetic at 19 and still having lots to prove, and we're talking about Harvey Elliott at 20 with nearly 100 games under his belt, still having a bit to prove. Archie Gray got an awful lot to prove, and I think 40 million seems like a huge thing. I think there's a contract negotiation going on there with Leeds. Obviously he's seen as a big thing, and he's got obviously a huge family history with Leeds, with his uncle, is it Eddie, or grandfather. So I think there's a little bit of that at play as well, in terms of agents putting clubs in Liverpool, we've seen used in the past. But what I would say is Liverpool, and also any other big club, would always be aware of a 17-year-old who's making waves in
in any football league really, but in the Championship in particular, and a big club like Leeds.
I'm playing every week.
He's
their first choice right back, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and he's played in midfield as well, hasn't he? So, of course, it's an interesting player, but I would be amazed if Liverpool or anyone went and spent £40 million on him at this stage, unless they were convinced that he was the best young player in the world.
Yeah, he's got, I mean,
or in the country,
and especially for a position where they got one. Like, I'd understand if like he's a right back, predominantly plays centre mid, but to DM slash right back, well, we've got one of them.
And quite a good one as well.
He's pretty good. Yeah, he's the vice captain of the football. If Liverpool were going to sign a kid, a real young,
exactly,
kid, you would feel it would be they go down the train on you wrote us of a young lad.
Yeah, or Calvin Ramsey. You know. I know. Like, I've mentioned him twice in the show. I mean, he's back. Great news for him, by the way. He's back training with Preston. He played a Lancashire Cup game recently, but they've done that with him. They've always had Nico Williams there, who you know, they couldn't give him enough football. Probably, you know, being brutally honest, didn't think he was at the level to go and ever be the first choice player for Liverpool. But a good player, Nico Williams, a Welsh international. They went and bought Calvin Ramsey for a few million because they think he's a development player that can potentially come in and be a good rotation option. He's had obviously terrible luck. If you're paying £40 million for a 17-year-old kid, I'd want to see him playing games.
You'd have to be in the team.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, however much potential he's got and however sort of, you know, time on his side he might have with his age, that's a big outlay to say that. You know, you would have to be convinced that he's going to be in your team pretty quickly, and you know, albeit he's playing really well for Leeds at the right end of the Championship, and you know, good luck to him, brilliant. Love seeing young players come through at the, you know, hometown clubs. I'd still want to see a bit more before I was signing that check.
Absolutely, and again, I've got no doubt about the Liverpool. If there's a 17-year-old playing first team football anywhere in Europe, Liverpool will be aware of them. Yeah. Again, I'm not doubting that there might be an interest in. Of course, there was no way. I don't know, man. That would be probably the most on Liverpool. I get Liverpool signing young players, just a model, but £40 million.
Absolutely,
it just baffles me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you say, they've signed younger players there in the past. Kate Gordon, who played in the first team, Ben Doak, who played for Celtic,
Harvey Elliott,
like
7 million,
you know, from Fulham. They signed them with the clear proviso that they're good, but it'll take time before they're getting into the first team. If you're putting £40 million down, or any, you know, and listen, I don't doubt, by the way, this is not me, Matthew's story, you know, it's more the £40 million might be the package, you know, it might be the sort of, oh yeah, we'll give you £5 million, and if he, you know, wins 4 Ballon d'Ors in 4 years, we'll give you an extra 10, that kind of thing. But to commit anything like even £20 million, you know, would be a huge statement on a young lad's talent, and I'm not sure Liverpool would make that kind of statement. I'm not sure many clubs would make that kind of statement. Maybe Chelsea.
Chelsea going to buy Phil with £41 million for him tomorrow after reading this one. But again, it does kind of open the question of like the Liverpool process of when they sign young players. You mentioned a few there, but even more, they have been really good. You mentioned Trey the other day, was on the bench, 16, or just taking
Callum Scanlon.
Callum Scanlon, yeah, like, lads, that tends to be the way they go about it. I mean, unless Archie Gray is like the next, I don't know, Roberto Carlos, but on the other side, the next Trent Alexander is probably a better option. Yeah, like, it just feels a bit over the top. But what I would say is that he's under contract till 2025. He's 17. This could even be greasing wheels for Vera Dan. I mean, it might, well, let's have a look when he's 19. Let's see where he is when he's 20.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way I would put it is this: would Liverpool pay £40 million for the best player in the Championship? And I'm talking about the best player, like, undeniably. I don't know who that would be, but
Dewsbury Hall or something like that.
Yeah, you know, like, yeah.
Maybe.
Probably not.
No.
So to the youngest, the hottest prospect in the Championship, not really. But yeah, you're right. If he then goes on and Leeds get promoted, then he's in the Premier League and you've done that groundwork and you think, he's a top player and he's moving up to, he's doing the Jude Bellingham route and he's going up towards the first team of England and all that, you know, then yeah, maybe. But yeah, it feels early now. But one thing I would say is it makes you want to watch Leeds a little bit, doesn't it? You know, I know they had a good win. They beat Leicester recently, didn't they, on a Friday night, and they're right up the right end. Daniel Farke's got them going after, you know, taking on a tough job. What are they, second or third in the league? Yeah, third, yeah. The two at the top are flying, aren't they, with Ipswich and Leicester, but Leeds have got themselves in. They're brilliant to see Preston, by the way, in fifth, Ryan Lowe. Scouse, Tyler Morton in eighth as well, with Hull City. He's playing every week in England under 21 squad. Great for him, great for Liverpool. So yeah, gives you a little bit to watch at the top of the Championship.
So mate, Ipswich just come up and have a second.
I mean, he's one of those rare examples, I suppose, isn't he, Kieran McKenna, of a coach with a real big reputation that goes and takes a number one job. And often I sort of look at them and go, okay, yes, good luck, mate, and we'll see you back as a first team coach somewhere. And he's actually gone and left Manchester United and gone and done an unbelievable job. And Maresca the same.
Don't say Leicester's the same.
Yeah, Maresca the same with Leicester. You know, the two of them seem to be real sort of good examples of modern coaches.
Absolutely.
Doing well. And I was impressed by Leicester when they come to Anfield in the Carabao. You know, they looked like they had a way of playing. And Them and Ipswich are what, 8 points clear at the top.
Cheers to Neil for coming in, and cheers to you guys for listening to this episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. Like I say, all those shows are available in full over on redmenplus.com. Use that code weekly, get yourselves a discount, go and check them out. It's absolute belter. While you're there, you'll see loads of our features, documentaries, interviews to keep you covered, your Liverpool fix during the international break, loads of evergreen stuff that you can fill your boots in. So yeah, go and get yourselves involved in Red Men Plus, and we'll be back next week with another episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'll see you all then.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.